Welcome to Festival Sounds. I'm your host, Bilal. This week, we have our very special guest, Eloise, and we're going to chat about sustainability at festivals.
Hello.
So, this August bank holiday weekend, we saw what was left over at Reading and Leeds, the tents, masses of tents. And we all thought sustainability really matters. This shouldn't be happening in 2023. Eloise, how did you get into sustainability at festivals?
Well, I mean, my experience in work was working in experiential marketing and production for brands. So I would do lots of outdoor events and experiences for brands like Pandora, NARS, and even Coca-Cola. This was quite a few years ago now. And when I was doing that and working in that industry, I just realised how wasteful things were. And at the same time, I was going to a festival every year, and which was doing a lot in terms of behaviour change and sustainability. And it sort of crept into my personal life. It turned me vegetarian. And I just started thinking, well, this is really great. I love what this festival's doing. I hate that my job is the opposite of this, and I need to do something about that. So then I sort of got on that bandwagon. I actually ended up working or volunteering at this said festival. I went from there really, and I started to change, saw how wasteful a lot of brands were in how they went around doing their events and connecting with their audience.
And it's really difficult to put on a festival without having a substantial environmental imprint. And we're talking about initially tents not being taken home. That's not the responsibility entirely of the festival. Yes, they've got to do a lot around communication and educating their guests, but the guests, the ticket holders, are the ones leaving it behind. So you've got two elements to it, haven't you? You have the festival trying to run in a sustainable way, and then you have the customers who either need to be taught to be more responsible, or, well, I don't know what the alternative is. They should be more responsible anyway. Taking your tent home isn't a genius idea. It's just common sense. But how do you get over that? How do you communicate that message out?
Well, the issue as well, which is another layer to this, is stores like supermarkets like Tesco, that are huge stores near to festival sites, are selling very cheap, very crap tents, and the problem is the curse of convenience. Ultimately, let's be honest, when you're young, I don't think I cared about any of that stuff when I was that age, and unless your parents or people bringing you up are constantly talking about that, even then you might not care, because social norms and your peers, who might not care if they're not doing it, why would you? It's so multifaceted as well, because to be honest, I do really think it is the responsibility of the event, as you've said, because if you're bringing that many people together, you have a real responsibility to orchestrate an event that actually is sustainable. But it's also about your audience and the kind of people that are coming to the event and the tone of the event. So some festivals find it easier to be sustainable because of the kind of community that they've created, or if they've had sustainability rooted in their festival from the beginning, it's much easier. But there's so many layers to why people leave their tents. It might be the convenience element of it. They wake up on the Monday morning, they feel like crap, they've spent very little on their disposable crappy tent, even though it shouldn't be disposable. So why am I going to bother taking this home? It's disposable culture in general. It's this linear way of living that we currently exist in, which is, a linear economy of take, make, waste, rather than a circular economy, which regenerates nature, circulates materials at their highest level, and designs out waste. So until we make massive changes on a bigger scale, this is a disposable culture will continue.
And those tents not going home and the circular economy conversation, I think, do go hand in hand. If you see a tent in a supermarket for £20, there are some people who will see that as a one-use disposable item.
Yeah.
And they don't care. They really don't. So they will leave it behind. In some instances, I've seen pictures and videos of them being set fire on the final day of the festival. Not the kind of festival I would want to go to. And that yeah, you're talking about social norms there and what's considered acceptable within peer groups. I do see that changing, and I don't think it's an age thing. I think the challenge on occasion isn't young people. I know people like to blame young people for all of society's ills. It's not that. Young people are incredibly socially responsible, incredibly engaged. I think there's that balance between peer pressure and the education piece.
Yeah.
Now, although it wasn't around tents, I was at a festival this summer that had a recycling bond where to encourage you to recycle, if you took a couple of recycling bags back to some recycling points, you would get a bond returned to you as part of your festival ticket. It triggers the conversation, at least within peer groups. And another point you made was around the ethos of a festival and what people buy into. If you go to a festival that is geared towards the lineup, you behave a particular way. Mm. If you go to one that's geared towards and marketed as an experience in nature, you will behave differently. And I think that you're seeing more frequently at festivals, or are you seeing it more frequently working in sustainability?
Definitely. I think what you could say is at this point, we're waking up in all areas, understanding slowly that we're in a real crisis as a planet and everything needs to change. And so you've got these festivals that have been running for years and suddenly they're having to make huge changes. So the changes that you might see at a smaller festival that are able to make those changes versus a bigger festival like Reading and Leeds will be very different. And it'll be about big wins versus, I haven't been to Reading that much. I went to Reading many years ago. And it was still that sort of culture of leaving your tents then as well. I think it's kind of embedded now, and they're fighting a real battle in terms of changing behavior there. I do think there are efforts being made. They've even created an eco camp where an additional cost. You just have to pre-book to be in their eco camp. And I think at this point it's about 14,000 people, 1,400 or 14,000. I'm not 100% sure on that, that are in the eco green camp. And it just means you kind of sign up to recycle, to keep your campsite clean, take your tent home. And I think that is a smart way of kind of from the inside spreading that campsite out and making impacting the behaviours that are the social norms there. But that is going to take time, and it's one of those things where you're battling with, we don't have that much time but we need to work slowly and be patient and understanding of where people are at and meet them where they are in terms of their stage of understanding change.
Part of that is the communication, and I wasn't aware that Reading and Leeds were running those eco camps. Mm. That's a big step forward based on my 2019 Reading and Leeds experience. What is it that makes a festival tick in terms of sustainability? Why should a festival care about sustainability? Because it's an event, it's going to have a negative effect on the area in one way or another. Mm. So what makes them care?
I mean, to speak to shareholders, at the very least, this future proofs your festival. In the situation we're at now, people are starting to really protest with their pound slowly but surely. And if your festival continues to be wasteful and emitting so much carbon, bringing so many people across the country, and all of your waste goes to landfill, eventually people are going to wise up to that and choose not to come. Not everybody. There'll be a group of people that will protest with their pound, and there'll be a group of people that don't care and will still go. But if you don't do all of that stuff, if you don't decide to be sustainable, and I mean really bake it into everything you do as a festival, then your days are numbered ultimately. And that's not a threat, but eventually you will run out of business, because we are living on a planet that has finite resource. We know that we're living, I always get this wrong, but basically we're using about 1.5 planets worth per year in terms of resource.
Wow.
And I mean, anybody can understand that that's not sustainable, that that's not realistic. We're not regenerating. We're not putting back into our planet. We're just taking. And that has a ceiling.
I agree with that on customers' pounds will be spent elsewhere.
Yeah.
Because there is now a growing market from festival goers who look at the credentials of a festival before they buy a ticket.
Yeah.
Now, I go to Green Man every year. That's probably my go-to festival. Yeah. And the way they behave means that I keep returning because I see good practice. I see clean campsites. Yeah. I can choose which festival I go to. You know, this is the nature of totally. This. And I think there's another element at play. You have where the customers are going to spend their money. And I think you're also now seeing a change from government on what they will license. If you don't have those credentials, they might not grant you a license next year.
Yeah.
If you cause so much damage to the land, I think the local area will start to campaign to say, we don't want this kind of activity. And you are seeing that actually in some of the festivals in London that take place in public parks, where the damage to the land is such, especially when the weather is bad, that the local community don't have use of it for months afterwards. And they will campaign not to allow that festival to run. So I can see the change coming from different angles.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I saw that triggered this change was water bottles, single-use plastic. And this is, it's a strange thing, but an incremental change. That was massive when that was first introduced.
Yeah.
And people pushed back against that. They thought it was a step too far. What do you think the next challenge is? What's the next single-use plastic challenge for festivals?
Obviously, tents are being addressed in different ways at festivals. I think that's an ongoing one because people don't think of it as plastic. And it's because they're leaving it behind, it becomes a single-use, even though a tent isn't. So that's a very strange one. I think the main battle, and I think the one that's building and building every year, is vapes. That's an incredibly difficult waste stream and a new one for festivals to deal with. But it's such a great opportunity to discuss health, planet health, disposable culture. All of those things are wrapped up in this awful disposable thing that's, you're breathing in oil. It's got a battery in it that's a finite resource. It's flammable. It's dangerous to other waste streams. It's a complete nightmare.
These single-use vapes have kind of blindsided me. I don't know where they've emerged from. Vapes, I don't think, were that expensive, but the elements that are going into single-use disposable vapes are precious metals. You can't just use them once and throw them away. And I understand that they're very hard to recycle. Is that right?
Yeah. So there's very little. I think that's changing now because there's a lot of petitions going on. But the fact that these things were approved before there was a actual controlled waste stream is just, it sums everything up really in our current state. The manufacturers, I think they have to technically provide a way to recycle it, but there's no communication around it. There's no access to bins to recycle. So all of these vapes are just going out and people aren't seeing them as e-waste because they're enclosed. You know, people aren't opening them up to see the mixed material that's in them. So I think it's something like 1.5 million tons of vape waste every year or something.
That's staggering.
I think I could be wrong with that result, but that stat. But yeah, it's horrifying. And the problem is with that as well, in terms of behavior change when addressing this waste, you're also battling a habit and an addiction, as well as trying to get people to realize that this is unsafe and bad for you.
Because nicotine. As a society, we said stop smoking and encourage people to vape.
Yeah.
And now we're saying, well, not that type of vape.
Yeah.
And I think that goes to the heart of good communication for festivals. Because if you tell someone not to do something, you're not going to drive the behaviors you
exactly.
want. You have to take people with you on a journey.
Yeah.
And that, for a one-off event or for an annual event, it's very difficult to take people on the journey. And I imagine most festivals will probably see around 50% of their customers return and then bring another fresh 50%. I'm making these figures up.
Yeah.
But they're always looking for new customers. So you might be able to take half of your customer base on a journey,
yeah.
but the other half is really transient.
Yeah.
So just telling them don't do this doesn't work. But unless you educate people and take them on that journey, you won't change behaviours. Yeah. And one of those I've seen actually is around travel. I didn't realise how much of my carbon footprint, I just assumed it was the festival, me being at the festival. Actually, it was my journey there, which was a footprint. And this year was the first time I went to a festival on a coach. And it totally changed. I know, that's terrible, isn't it? It sounds pretentious as well. And I didn't know what to expect. I was expecting a horrendous experience. It was only a two-hour journey. But it was really nice. Yeah. I had a great time. The people around me were great. They were all, surprise, surprise, they were all like me because we were all heading to a festival together. But yeah, just taking the car, and quite often I would take the car by myself. And I would take more things than I would need to. Mm. Although you did make fun of my tiny plastic stool at this festival, because that's all I could fit.
I used it myself. So. Yeah.
But, you know, you got to cut down a little bit and end up taking this little tiny stool to fit on the coach. But the coach experience was really positive. What's the travel footprint like for festivals? Is it a significant part of their emissions?
It's huge. So anyone listening that's interested in diving further into this, Vision 2025 did a great report a couple of years ago now, called The Show Must Go On. And they sort of looked into this in detail and all areas of sustainability for festivals. But it turns out that audience travel to and from the festival equates to 80% of an event's carbon emissions, total carbon emissions.
80%, 80%.
80. And actually I think it's gone up to around 90 now. 90. So I haven't got the stats, but yeah.
That's a staggering number. Is that because festivals are so good at reducing their own footprint? Or is it because travel is just that inefficient?
I think it's both. If you're a festival that's concentrating on their emissions, you can control that in some form. You know, you can opt for a better power supply. You could even, if depending on the size of your festival, you could decide to go off grid and be solar or use only renewable energy, depending on your location. But with audience travel, all you can do is communicate about going by public transport, and then providing the convenient way to do that. You obviously have to put infrastructure in place, you know, provide the coaches, incentivized by the coach ticket being cheaper than the regular ticket and things like that. You can put things in place, but ultimately you're going against social norms. Once again, you're going against, oh well, my mate's going to drive, so why can't I? And oh, it's more convenient for me and I want to be able to get out on time on Monday. And you know, everybody's got different situations.
I'll be honest, I'm one of those people who probably it's not a responsible position to take, but if my first coach journey there and back had been poorly managed, I never would have taken the coach again. Like, festivals generically, all festivals in the UK basically got one chance of doing this right for me. And if I couldn't have, say, got out of the festival at a good time, then I just turn around and say, well, car is clearly better. If I'd have been made to wait for an hour, 90 minutes to get a coach, I'd have said, well, okay, this isn't for me, because by then I could have practically been home. And you don't get much opportunity to win people over. And I'd say I'm probably a fairly typical consumer in that respect. So you're right. It's not just a case of doing it. It's got to be done properly.
Yeah.
And it's got to be well managed. That infrastructure has to be there. It's got to be organized. Because if you're encouraging people to change, it's got to be good.
Yeah.
You can't just say cars are bad, therefore get our terrible coaches. No one's going
to
do it.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. They do have to get it right first time. But what I love about festivals is it's essentially a microcosm of society, right? And there's a system there. So there's all these little opportunities to create behavior change, to pepper people with, oh, why don't you just start using a reusable coffee cup instead of just buying a coffee whenever you want? Why don't you take a cup with you? Or have a reusable water bottle, or here's two bin bags. So now you're thinking about separating your waste, even at a festival. There's all these little behavior change seeds being planted. So if a person had a bad experience on the coach, they might come to the festival, see other alternatives to the way of living, see that there's a way that you can be more sustainable, go home and go, okay, well, the coach wasn't great, but I think I might try that again because of all these other things that impacted me and I've taken home with me, I might try again. But that's not for everybody. It all depends where you're at in your journey of understanding sustainability.
I kind of feel like you're telling me don't judge the coach based on one journey. And actually, it all worked smoothly. It was effortless. Yeah. Glastonbury ticket sale is coming up and I will be trying for coach tickets. It's turned me around to that point where in previous years, I never even tried to get a coach ticket. It's just, I'd rather not have gone to the festival. I mean, albeit that's going to be double the length of the journey. But having had a positive experience, yeah, it's turned me around. There's another point you mentioned there, and I didn't even realise I was participating in it, was the coffee cups.
Yeah.
So, yes, I bought an enamel mug years ago, and I've been taking it to festivals since. And, yeah, I hadn't even realised, but that was just, it had become the societal norm within the festivals I was going to. And you're right, I've probably dozens and dozens of coffee cups saved just based on that one enamel mug, which I use almost on a daily basis here at home as well. That's very clever. It hadn't occurred to me that was what was going on. I suppose there's a lot like this.
Yeah, there's something about that as well. You know, you've probably bought that enamel mug, used it at a festival, and then as a result, it kind of retained great memories for you. So you sort of take it home and you think, oh, maybe I'll use that here, or oh, I'll take that with me when I go to a day thing or whatever. So I think that's one of the main reasons sustainability is so important at festivals, because you have such a opportunity and a platform to impart positive experiences with a taste of change and for people to take that home with them. Because festivals in general, you're in flux when you're at a festival. You're, you know, at the will of the elements. You've decided to sleep outside in a tent. you have to, if it rains, have you got the right footwear? If you haven't, you're going to be dealing with an immediate change of some kind. So you're already in that mindset that, oh, I'll see what the day brings. I'll see where things take me. And as a result, if you're surrounded by things, systems within that festival that are encouraging you softly to make changes, for example, not eating meat. Maybe the festival just decides to provide vegan and vegetarian food, or decides not to have cow's milk and only have alternative milks. There's little chances for you to try something new in an environment where you're already in that sort of change. You're signing up to change. And then from there, you can take that home. And that does have a ripple. I mean, the reason I work in sustainability, the reason I'm vegetarian, is because I went to a festival that showed me all of these behavior change points. And I took that home and went, oh my God, I need to do lots of different things. I need to do lots of things differently.
That's really interesting. Which festival was that?
It was Shambhala Festival.
Wow, transformative, it was. That festival.
And I've been going ever since. So I'm a bit of a fangirl for them, but there's so much potential. I mean, the problem is festivals are temporary. And as you've said, you might retain 50% of your audience and then you'll get a new group that come along too. But there's a lot of potential in there to really continue that ripple of effect of change. But they do have a limit. You know, they're a temporary experience. They're once a year. They're more of a tool, a support tool to get people to make change. They are not the ultimate thing that can make change. They're just a part of that.
Do you think they have a responsibility as a festival community to fundamentally shift towards a more ethical ethos? Do you think they should be obliged to or forced to, if they choose to carry on running festivals the way they always have?
Absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, you could take it broader and say we all have a responsibility. I think that can scare people and maybe make it feel like that it's on their shoulders. But it really is a shared responsibility. All of this approach to tackling climate change, climate justice, we all need to be involved in some way. The key thing is that it will be all of our roles will be different. It won't all be equal. It won't all be 50-50. But yeah, a festival, without a doubt, if they want to survive this current landscape, they need to do it for their own shareholders and for everybody involved, but more importantly, for all stakeholders, all Earth stakeholders. You've got to do it. It also just makes sense. I mean, you improve the experience that somebody has at a festival when you take out plastic bottles, when you use a reusable cup system, when you have a really effective waste stream, because the whole site is clearer. It's clean, it's tidy. And the impact that can have on somebody because their environment is clean, that can then impact how they treat themselves, how they treat others around them. If they see waste on the floor, I've witnessed people pick that up and be like, right, which bin does this go in? And it cultivates a healthier approach, both in your experience and then when you leave, I think. But it's also a hedonistic experience, right? Most festivals. So I don't want to sound naive. I don't think people are reached all at the same level and suddenly skip off out of the festival thinking, I'm going to change the world. That's not what happens. You know, some people will be open to it and some people won't.
I think both things can be true. It can be hedonistic and responsible.
Yeah.
It's not going to curtail your hedonism if you're drinking out of a enamel mug that you've had all weekend.
Yeah.
You're still going to have a really good time, better than you would have in the real world, as anyone in the festival community would say.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a binary choice. I think both can be true.
Yeah. I always think about the trans theoretical model. So stages of change is what it's known as, and it's used for, or it was created originally for help people quit smoking, but it's essentially a cycle of realizing that you might want to make change, moving into maybe taking some action to make change, and then you might fall off the wagon, as they say, you might start smoking again, but there's always a way to get back into that cycle of, no, I'm going to try again. Everybody is at a different stage of change. So when at a festival, if you are approaching sustainability, you have to meet them where they are. And as you said, you can't be forceful. You can't be like, don't do this. It's not about that. It's about creating an environment where people can experience new things in a happy, positive way. And either they'll be hedonistic, they won't really notice, but they might take on some things from watching other people use an enamel mug, or, oh, that person was really conscious of their campsite and my campsite was kind of dirty, like messy, but the people next to me were really obsessed with keeping theirs tidy. Maybe next year I should make a conscious effort. You know, these little seeds that happen. So I do think there's a lot of subconscious things happening as well. Like, I think some people really notice it and some people don't. But either way, you're probably going to be taking something away from the festival, be that good or bad.
I couldn't agree more. I absolutely agree more. Thank you, Eloise, for joining us on Festival Sounds. I found this fascinating. We'd love to have you back at some point.
Thank you. I'd love to come back. Yeah, I mean, we've only really covered environmental sustainability, let alone discussing social sustainability in festivals. So, you know, that's a whole nother very important pillar. But I just love talking about this stuff. It's my bread and butter.
Let's do it. Let's get you back.
I'd love to. See you soon.